I hope mine impresses you.
Chapter 99. CIA field agent Turner Simpkins crouched in the darkness of Franklin Park and kept his steady gaze on Warren Bellamy. Nobody had taken the bait yet, but it was still early. Simpkins' transceiver beeped, and he activated it, hoping one of his men had spotted something. But it was Sato. She had new information. Simpkins listened and agreed with her concern.
"Hold on," he said. "I'll see if I can get a visual."
He crawled through the bushes in which he was hiding and peered back in the direction from which he had entered the square. After some maneuvering, he finally opened a sight line.
Holy shit.
He was staring at a building that looked like an old-world mosque. Nestled between two much larger buildings, the Moorish facade was made of gleaming terracotta tile laid in intricate, multicolored designs. Above the three massive doors, two tiers of lancet windows looked as if Arabian archers might appear and open fire if anyone approached uninvited.
"I see it," Simpkins said.
"Any activity?"
"Nothing."
"Good. I need you to reposition and watch it very carefully. It's called the Almas Shrine Temple, and it's the headquarters of a mystical order."
Simpkins had worked in the D.C. area for a long time, but was not familiar with this temple or any ancient mystical order headquartered on Franklin Square.
"This building," Sato said, "belongs to a group called the Ancient Arabic Order of Nobles of the Mystic Shrine."
"Never heard of them."
"I think you have," Sato said. "They're an appendant body of the Masons, more commonly known as the Shriners."
Simpkins shot a dubious glance at the ornate building. The Shriners? The guys who build hospitals for kids? He could imagine no order less ominous sounding than a fraternity of philanthropists who wore little red fezes and marched in parades. Even so, Sato's concerns were valid.
"Ma'am, if our target realizes that this building is in fact the order on Franklin Square, he won't need the address. He'll simply bypass the rendezvous and go directly to the correct location."
"My thoughts exactly. Keep an eye on the entrance."
"Yes, ma'am."
"Any word from Agent Hartman in Kalorama Heights?"
"No, ma'am. You asked him to phone you directly."
"Well, he hasn't."
Odd, Simpkins thought, checking his watch. He's overdue. Chapter 100. Robert Langdon lay shivering, naked, and alone in total blackness. Paralyzed by fear, he was no longer pounding or shouting. Instead, he had closed his eyes and was doing his best to control his hammering heart and his panicked breathing.
"You are lying beneath a vast nighttime sky," he tried to convince himself. "There is nothing above you but miles of wide open space."
This calming visualization had been the only way he had managed to survive a recent stint in an enclosed MRI machine. That and a triple dose of Valium. Tonight, however, the visualization was having no effect whatsoever. The rag in Catherine Solomon's mouth had shifted backward and was all but choking her. Her captor had carried her down a narrow ramp and into a dark basement corridor. At the far end of the hall, she had glimpsed a room lit with an eerie reddish-purple light, but they'd never made it that far. The man had stopped instead at a small side room, carried her inside, and placed her on a wooden chair. He had set her down with her bound wrists behind the chair back, so she could not move. Now Catherine could feel the wire on her wrists slicing deeper into her flesh. The pain barely registered next to the rising panic she was feeling over being unable to breathe. The cloth in her mouth was slipping deeper into her throat, and she felt herself gagging reflexively. Her vision started to tunnel. Behind her, the tattooed man closed the room's lone door and flipped on the light. Catherine's eyes were watering profusely now, and she could no longer differentiate objects in her immediate surroundings. Everything had become a blur. A distorted vision of colorful flesh appeared before her, and Catherine felt her eyes starting to flutter as she teetered on the brink of unconsciousness. A scale-covered arm reached out and yanked the rag from her mouth. Catherine gasped, inhaling deep breaths coughing and choking as her lungs flooded with precious air. Slowly, her vision began to clear, and she found herself looking into the demon's face. The visage was barely human. Blanketing his neck, face, and shaved head was an astounding pattern of bizarre tattooed symbols. With the exception of a small circle on top of his head, every inch of his body appeared to be decorated. A massive double-headed phoenix on his chest glared at her through nipple eyes like some kind of ravenous vulture, patiently waiting for her death.
"Open your mouth," the man whispered.
Catherine stared at the monster with total revulsion.
"What?"
"Open your mouth," the man repeated, "or the cloth goes back in."
Trembling, Catherine opened her mouth. The man extended his thick, tattooed index finger, inserting it between her lips. When he touched her tongue, Catherine thought she would vomit. He extracted his wet finger and raised it to the top of his shaved head. Closing his eyes, he massaged her saliva into his small circular patch of untattooed flesh. Repulsed, Catherine looked away. The room in which she was sitting appeared to be a boiler room of some sort. Pipes on the walls, gurgling sounds, fluorescent lights. Before she could take in her surroundings, though, her gaze stopped dead on something beside her on the floor. A pile of clothing. Turtleneck, tweed sport coat, loafers, Mickey Mouse watch.
"My God!"
She wheeled back to the tattooed animal before her.
"What have you done with Robert?"
"Shh,"
the man whispered,
"or he'll hear you."
He stepped to one side and motioned behind him. Langdon was not there. All Catherine saw was a huge black fiberglass box. Its shape bore an unsettling resemblance to the heavy crates in which corpses were shipped back from war. Two massive clasps firmly locked the box shut.
"He's inside?"
Catherine blurted.
"But he'll suffocate."
"No, he won't,"
the man said, pointing to a series of transparent pipes that ran along the wall into the bottom of the crate.
"He'll only wish he could."
In total darkness, Langdon listened intently to the muffled vibrations he now heard from the outside world.
"Voices?"
He began pounding on the box and shouting at the top of his lungs.
"Help! Can anyone hear me?"
Far off, a muted voice called out,
"Robert! My God, no! No!"
He knew the voice. It was Catherine, and she sounded terrified. Even so, it was a welcome sound. Langdon drew a breath to call out to her.